You're listening to Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the Brothers Anderson talk about movies. We don't merely scratch the surface, we dig deep and probe the movies. We get up all in there, but not in a creepy way. Spoilers, there will be some. Sit back, grab a beverage of your choice, close your eyes and listen to the sounds of the Brothers Anderson.
Awkward.
Are you ready to go?
Sure.
Okay, well, welcome. This is Eric.
Andrew.
And tonight we're going to talk about the 1999 film Stigmata. Let me start by suggesting why I wanted to watch this movie again. Because this movie, I think there may have been a little element of Nightbreed to this movie. It turns out what I really loved about this movie was the first minute and a half and that Chumbawamba song, Mary Mary. That is on my, seriously, that's on my heavy rotation list for like walking or working out, is that song. It's fantastic. What I didn't expect is, well, upon rewatching it, to realize that Patricia Arquette, who is the main character in this story, she is a, how is the best way to describe it? She, at least in this stage of her life, she is kind of a flat actress. Like, do you remember her in Nightmare on Elm Street 3, The Dream Warriors?
I do not.
Okay, well, I didn't either, because she, even though her character was very important in that movie, she was just sort of flat and hollow acting. And that's kind of how she was in this movie, too.
I don't know if I fully agree with you. I think my take on it was she wasn't really given much to do with. You know, her character didn't have much range, but I think she delivered.
Well, fair enough. Shall we just dive into the plot?
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah. Well, this movie was a lot about style, and it was sort of it was in 1999, and I think it was kind of supposed to be sort of a low-rent exorcist. Although I can see what you mean about confusing Gabriel Byrne's role in this movie with his role in End of Days, which I think we saw in the theater together.
We may have.
In Missouri.
End of Days had a really hilarious introduction scene to the devil when he takes over Gabriel Byrne's body. He comes out of a restaurant bathroom and just manhandles the woman he's having dinner with, I think the wife of his buddy.
Oh, yeah. That was a great scene.
It's so funny. I don't know if they meant it to be funny, but it was hilarious.
Yeah, unfortunately, there wasn't this level of hilarity in this particular movie. But what we have here is the film opens in the Brazilian village of Belo Quinto with Father Andrew Kiernan, Gabriel Byrne, who's a former scientist and a Jesuit priest who investigates miracles, and he's there to examine the statue of the Virgin of Guadalupe weeping blood at the funeral of Father Paulo Alameda. So, in a strangely convenient plot device, a young boy steals the rosary from the priest whose his body is in state, and so this little boy steals his rosary, and then sells it to a woman in the marketplace, who then sends it to her daughter, Frankie Page, who is Patricia Arquette, who is an atheist living in Pittsburgh. Now, I would have thought that this was completely unbelievable until, did you realize that our current pope, or the current pope, rather, actually stole a rosary from another pope?
I was not aware of that.
Yeah, that was one of the things he convinced, or maybe it wasn't another pope, but maybe his spiritual advisor down in Argentina. Yeah, he stole a rosary at a funeral as well, and confessed to it. This current pope, Pope Francis, as a matter of fact.
Nice.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
Yeah. Well, see, there you go.
It has a resonance still today.
Yeah, but you do point out this movie, Stigmata, has a wonderful economy of characters.
Yeah, that's you're much more polite than I would be about it.
Yeah, I think the only character there are two characters that get more than a couple lines who really aren't connected to the central plot. One of them is Portia de Rossi, and the other is, I think he's the dude who used to be on Days of Our Lives.
Is he the priest off in the Vatican who's doing research?
No, he was very integral to the plot. No, I'm talking about the one night stand.
Okay. Yeah, I see. I forgot all about him entirely. He was so not integral to the plot.
The priest doing research, he's one of the three.
Oh, no, I understand. No, he's very important to the plot. Sorry. I downgraded his importance in the story. But anywho, Patricia Arquette lives in Pittsburgh, and she is a hairstylist. And she is her character is a very specific time and place that I think is another reason why I remember this movie fondly. Because she's dressed and she acts in a very 1999 kind of way.
Yeah, kind of a punky kind of slutty way.
And also sort of like punky, slutty, but also sort of carefree, artsy, not quite grown up way. Well, she's only 23, so there you go.
Yeah, the opening credits and scenes thereafter, I think, are supposed to be shocking to show you that she sort of has loose morals by showing her going out and tying one on with her friends at a club and then having some casual sex with an acquaintance. And I think at the time that was supposed to be pretty disconcerting to the viewer, but I think nowadays I just assume that every 23-year-old is doing that.
That's a commentary in and of itself. So, first of all, I kind of love her apartment. I kind of love her headboard.
Yeah, for being a hairstylist, she has a great apartment.
Oh, she does.
I mean, the roof leaks. But that only adds to the ambiance.
Yeah, and the roof leaks, but she doesn't have any kind of mold or roach problem, so that's awesome.
And yeah, and it's enormous, it's open, it's got great lighting.
Oh, and it's filled with fun stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So she is, she is footloose and fancy free, both footloose right, and moral loose. She's an atheist, that's very clear from the beginning. And she gets this package from her mom, which is the rosary of Father Alameda, who we find out has actually been experiencing the stigmata for himself. But then Frankie takes a bath. And first of all, who did the score for this movie? Billy Corgan did the score for this movie.
Yeah.
And I'm going to have to drop in a clip of the music that's going on when she has her bath experience. I don't even know what is making that sound, but it is bizarre. It is a strange thing to put, that's a strange kind of music to throw in there. Or, I don't know if it's music or, supposed to be an audio cue of some kind.
Yeah, I don't even remember the music because she did this thing that people only do on TV or in movies when they're taking a bath, which is she submerges her whole face under the water. I don't think anybody actually does that.
No, I can't see the attraction.
And people only do that right before something really bad is going to happen. Even if you had the itch to do that, wouldn't you just think, there's no way I'm going to do that because an alien is going to jump out of my brain as soon as I do.
Well, also, she's got, if I remember correctly, unlike every other bath in the entire world, that I'm at least familiar with, my middle class proletariat baths. She's got a bath that is not attached to a wall in any way. Got a lot of room on all sides of this bath.
Right.
Yeah, as if the bath is like in the middle of the room.
It is.
Yeah, it's very strange. But, of course, this is an excellent place for a very strange thing to happen to her, where she has this sort of attack, and she ends up with really deep wounds in her wrists. In fact, not only are they deep, but they go all the way through her wrists, both of them. So her friend finds her, takes her to the hospital, and of course they think she did this on purpose as some sort of suicidal thing. But she's sassy and says, no, I like being me quite a bit.
Wow, you look at that? It only bleeds when I touch it.
Maybe you should not touch it.
Both wounds are identical, the same size, same shape. She missed the main artery by less than a centimeter.
You keep saying she, but I didn't do this.
What's happening in your life, Frankie? Do you have a lot of stress at work?
I cut hair.
Do you have any trouble with a significant other?
Yes.
And that is?
I'm not very significant. Look, how long is this going to take? I want to go home.
Oh, I think you should stay here at least 24 hours for observation. We need to get a handle on this.
There's nothing to get a handle on.
Frankie, I'm not going to kid you. With wounds like this, it's pretty obvious that they were self-inflicted.
You think I did this? It would never happen. I love being me. Ask anyone.
Who was the doctor who was talking to her? She was someone I did not expect in this movie.
No, but oh, I don't have it in front of me. But yeah, she is a familiar face. She wasn't the sister on Roseanne, was she? No.
No, she was a. It was a Perkins.
It was a Perkins?
Yeah, one of the Perkins women.
So, at this point, something's going on with her that we don't quite understand, and she doesn't quite understand, although the movie title sort of gives away what's happening. This movie actually speaks to a time also when certain things were very hip to talk about. Like, for instance, the Gnostic Gospels. The Gnostic Gospels. It's hard to say. Specifically, the Gospel of Timothy, which we'll get into a little bit later.
Yeah, this movie came out at a weird time. It was pre-9/11, and it was pre-Y2K, but sort of post-Cold War, post-AIDS, or the big AIDS scare. So they weren't really... But there weren't any sort of universal villains except for technology and the church. So this was sort of a sign of the times that you knew pretty quickly that the church was going to be the bad guy of the movie. Even though it seemed at first that, it could have been some demon that was attacking, Frankie.
Well, and it's, I have a question about that too.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not, because she seems possessed. The stigmata is not just weird sores appearing, but she's sort of possessed. Well, not just sort of later on. And one of the questions that Roger Ebert actually poised, because he called this the funniest movie about Catholicism that he had ever seen. I can go into Ebert's talk a little bit later, but yeah,
I miss Ebert.
Me too. The theology in this movie is strange. They really picked and choosed, what they used, which, you know, I mean, obviously if I wrote this movie, it would be the same way because I don't know enough about it other than, you know, what I would read in the papers and, but I think like David Morrell did a better job in his discussion of the Catholic Church.
The Fraternity of the Stone?
Yeah. And yeah, the whole thing. Absolutely. League of Nine Fog too, actually. So the doctors can't find out what the cause of this is, although they assume that she did this herself as a suicidal gesture. And so she blows them off. And on her way home on the subway, she and her friend, Nia Long, she sees a priest sitting in the subway car and goes down to him and asks if he is Andrew Kiernan. The priest says, no, not at all. But as he's explaining who he is, then she has her second attack and the train lights begin to flash, all the car like whips her on crazy. She ends up holding on to the subway car straps like she's being crucified. And then she gets the second set of stigmata, which is the whipping scars on her back. And I remember this scene being super stylish at the time. I was a little bit disappointed watching it this time that it was more goofy than anything else. And clearly, I think this girl has epilepsy. I mean,
of course.
She's got a giant brain tumor or something.
It's really the only logical conclusion.
Yeah.
It wasn't a Perkins, by the way. It was a Cusack.
Oh, Joan Cusack?
Yeah.
Get out of town. Okay. Yeah, see, because of those goofy glasses on her. Otherwise, I probably would have recognized her instantly.
Yeah. I really pictured that one.
Yeah. Oh, she's the best. So anyway, so now we have stigmata number two. And the father Durning, who is the priest on the subway, witnesses this. And the priest gets the security tapes and then sends them to the Vatican, because priests are very resourceful in this world. So the Vatican sends Andrew Kiernan to investigate, even though he wants to go back to Bella Quinto because he thinks there's an actual miracle going on with the bleeding statue.
Yeah, there's some immediate conflict between Kiernan and his boss, and that there's at no time in this movie do you ever think that the bad guy is going to be anybody but Kiernan's boss, right?
Oh, no, not at all. And it was sort of like the, you know, the whole Top Gun setup where there doesn't seem to be any reason why there's this, or at least they don't explain in detail that I remember, why Kiernan and his boss are so, there's just so much conflict. I mean, I guess it's because it's his boss. But, right. You know.
It's exactly like Top Gun, except without the topless volleyball.
Well, of course, or the singing. Have you seen Top Gun lately?
Not from start to finish.
Okay, it turns out that singing scene is really painful to watch.
Yeah, it's dumb.
Well,
the whole movie is dumb.
I feel sorry for the black guy, too, because he is just the black guy. I mean, he might as well tap dance out of that bar. It's very, very sad.
This is a really extreme tangent. Have you seen Planes?
I have not.
The Disney movie? There is a really funny scene where there's some voice cameos by Anthony Edwards and Val Kilmer.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. It's a movie called Queens?
Sorry, it must be my bad connection. Planes.
Planes. Okay, sorry, the Queens? that's strange. Okay, no, Planes.
Yeah, Queens is a totally different movie, and it was not made by Disney.
A Disney movie? I'm like, I don't understand. I don't get it. And why would there be voiceovers? And yeah. you've seen the movie Planes, obviously?
Yeah.
Okay. I got a question for you, because I haven't. And this is, again, tangent off to Planes. But there was a criticism, I think, on Comedy Film Nerds, the podcast, that where Cars used the sort of trope of making the cars the main characters of the story, and then Planes was basically the same stylistic design. But in the Planes movie, there's actually people getting killed. Is that right or wrong?
That is not right. People are not getting killed.
Okay, good. All right. Excellent. Because I like the idea.
That's right.
People are getting killed?
Not people, but planes.
Okay, well, yeah. But, okay, all right. I guess I'll have to watch the movie to figure this out, what they were talking about.
Yeah. It's a better movie than I thought it was going to be.
Oh, good.
I think it was actually made as it was intended to be like a straight-to-video sequel to Cars, but it ended up being so good that they decided to release it theatrically.
Well, they knew going in they were making three of them, because Carlos Salazarraqui does some of the voice work in the movie, and he was talking about, oh yeah, he got the contract already for the three Planes movies.
Huh. I haven't seen Cars.
Cars, the first one is good. The second one is less good, but it's okay. It's got some clever stuff in there. The best thing about Cars is you really get the feel of the racetrack. Like the little beads of tire that come off of the tire on the race cars and skitter across the track.
Oh.
Yeah. Right. It's really, like, pretty cool.
Whatever. Neither one of them can hold a candle to Frozen.
Apparently not, no. My daughter doesn't really like that movie. I mean, it was fine. She just didn't, you know, maybe because she doesn't have a sister.
Well, hopefully that means she has a little bit more variety in her life.
Yeah, well, the Comedy Film Nerds guys hated the Rio movies, too, and I thought they were fine. My daughter loves them, so, you know. So at this point in our movie Stigmata, we have Frankie now, who has two different kinds of stigmata, and we have Father Kiernan, who's coming to investigate her. And then he meets her, she says she's been expecting him, and then he interviews her and tells her a little bit about stigmata. But when she says she's an atheist, he's like, okay, well then you don't have stigmata, because that's only spiritual people. Because apparently stigmata is a gift from God. You have to be especially devoted and in touch with God to get the stigmata.
Apparently.
Yeah.
I only know that from Gabriel Byrne.
Well, exactly. There's a lot of things that Gabriel Byrne here says that is actually either convenient interpretation of whatever the actual canon of the church is, or just plain made-up bullshit. So we have, he explains that there are 5 wounds that Jesus Christ received during the crucifixion. And the 5th one is the spear that they stab into his side, and he says it's the one that kills him. However, apparently, it in the real canon, the spear was used just to determine whether he was already dead or not. Maybe nitpicking there.
Yeah, another tangent here. Have you seen the Last Temptation of Christ?
I have not.
Well, if you ever have if you ever have any desire to see it, the Criterion edition of it has some fascinating special features. In particular, one about the actual act of crucifixion, which I found very informative. I mean, well, they touched on some of it in this movie about how they would have had to crucify people to the wrist and not the hands, like people commonly believe, because the hand wouldn't be able to support the weight of a body.
Well, it's very possible that this was the first movie where that was ever pointed out to me, because they did make a big deal of that, and I think that was clever. I mean, that was good. That, you know, again, have you seen? And I haven't seen this either, but have you seen The Passion of the Christ?
Yes.
And
it
less temptation.
It was a good movie for what it was. I mean, it was really hard to watch. I wouldn't ever want to watch it again, but I'm glad I saw it. Because I'd never seen a depiction before of what Christ likely went through as part of his whole torture and execution.
And so it gives you a better appreciation for the whole Easter story?
Yeah, I mean, it's really trite to say, you know, he suffered for our sins. And you know, whether you believe it or not, that's a really, it's a really abstract phrase. But when you consider what kind of suffering it actually was, and really how prolonged it was, it definitely gives you a better perspective. There was one particularly heartbreaking scene, which has been in a few movies, but it's I think it's after the Last Supper. You know, Jesus knows what's going to happen, and he's praying to God because he's terrified and doesn't know if he can actually do it, because he knows what's coming. And that in and of itself is hard to watch.
Hmm. So maybe for our Easter movie we can watch. No, maybe not.
No, I won't watch it again.
Okay. Schindler's List, maybe then.
Yeah.
Okay, sure. Maybe not.
That'll have fond memories of that. That was my first date with my current wife.
Yeah. Your current wife. Your first wife. Okay, so...
Today is our 14th anniversary.
Oh, get out of town. Congratulations. That's fantastic.
14, I feel really old now.
14 is great.
Yeah, we've done the math. We've been together 20 years.
Yeah, excellent. So, longer than you haven't.
Yes.
Yeah, excellent. See, that's great.
Yeah, that happened.
Well, it's going to be a long time before Kelly and I can say that, but, you know. Okay, so back to suffering. Or perhaps continuing suffering, depending on how you feel about marriage. Not you, of course, because I'm sure you're happily married and living in bliss, as am I. But anyway, so Frankie does research. This is, of course, pre-internet research, I think. And yeah, definitely pre-internet research, because she finds a lot of books on stigmata. And it makes for interesting visuals, but it's a little hokey and kind of...
Wait, sort of, I thought the books were about like epilepsy and brain tumors and stuff.
Wasn't there both in there?
Oh, I don't remember a second book montage.
I could be misremembering it.
Yeah, I just remember thinking, there's no way with the rent on that amazing apartment that she'd be able to afford all those books. And then, like, on the very last book, you saw, like, a library barcode.
Ah, yes. Well, because she does, like, you know.
Yeah, no one else in Pittsburgh will now be able to learn about their own epilepsy.
So, what do you do when you think you have epilepsy? You go to the nightclub. And that's when you end up with the third stigmata, which is the crown of thorns. Which, I guess the special effects is just a product of its time. I don't think, even though it's not very realistic looking, it turns out it's hard to make realistic looking like slash wounds in someone. And you wouldn't want it to be super realistic, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, it looked unpleasant.
Yeah. It just seemed a tiny bit over the top, but I guess, you know, this movie was a little bit that way. So she runs home, and then Kiernan is waiting for her, and then she goes into an alley, and she smashes a glass bottle and starts carving things onto the hood of a car. Andrew approaches her, Kiernan approaches her, and she yells at him in another language, which, as it turns out, she was yelling in Aramaic, the language of Christ. I think Aramaic, the language of Christ, was also very popular during this time.
Yeah, that was definitely a thing. That's how you knew it was an authentic religious movie.
Exactly, yeah, because you wouldn't want to be fooled by other such nonsense. So she goes home, and the next morning, Kiernan goes to her apartment to find her writing in a magic marker on the wall that's covered in Aramaic. Now, just a side note here on the production of this movie. What she writes on the wall isn't actually Aramaic, it's ancient Hebrew. And that was a choice by the director because he thought that looked more intriguing than the Aramaic would have.
Oh, filmmakers.
When questioned, Frankie responds in a male voice speaking Italian and then collapses on the bed.
Yeah, this was definitely the most exorcist-y scene.
It's the whole scene in that apartment is super exorcist-y. Which, you know, The Exorcist was a fine movie. I mean, it didn't really scare me like it did people who are Catholic, but it had some nice effects to it. This was fine.
It moved the plot along.
Yeah.
I think if you, as the viewer, hadn't put the pieces together yet, I think this cemented it for you. And, yeah, this is where I started to get frustrated that Kiernan wasn't catching on quicker. Because as the hero of the movie, you need to have some sort of respect for him. And when the movie is, you know, deliberately making him obtuse, it's hard to keep going with him.
Yeah. And again, this is where he goes to the church underground and emails these photographs to the Vatican, where his friend, Brother Delmonico,
I think that they're so high-tech at the time.
It's a strange convention that you have Brother Delmonico in the Vatican reaching through, reading through ancient and translating ancient texts as his job. And he's getting these emails and faxes and things. It just seems a little incongruous and kind of fun.
Very sinister translations, because he isn't given the whole text.
No. Yeah, the texts are divided into three parts, and each of those sent to three different translators so that none of them know what the real text says all the way through.
Not just three parts, like, it's uncollated. Like, they get every third page.
Oh, yeah, exactly. You're right. I'm sorry. I didn't assume. Yeah, it totally, they have no context either.
Yeah.
Which is actually...
I don't think it'd work.
Well, and yeah, I don't think it'll work either for translation, because you think you have to rely on one part of the document for the other. But also...
And I think if you read every third page of a book, it might be hard, but I think you could figure out what was going on.
Well, okay, yeah, I think you're right there, too. But it's a very, again, my knowledge of theology is very limited. But it seems like a very Catholic thing that you don't really... want they're priests, but still, you don't want them on the inn, because basically the head of the church is the one who translates the holy texts. It's not, you know, you're not encouraged to read the text on your own. It's kind of the point of it. That's the point of Protestantism.
Yeah.
So
it's the evil church.
No, they're not Jews.
I'll be
taking that out of the podcast.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. There's, just to go off on a tiny tangent, there's a podcast I used to listen to a lot more, but I really like anyway. It's called Totally Lame. It's this lady named Elizabeth Lame, and she's married to a Jewish guy, half-Jewish guy, named Andy Rosen.
Dr. Rosen,
yeah. So you've listened to the podcast?
I have.
Well, the funny thing about her is that she makes all those, like, Jewish jokes, but in such a way, and she takes such glee about it, that at first I was concerned that she might be anti-Semitic. I think it's just her delivery style, though.
But she's just delighting the fact that she married into it, so she can use it as comedic material.
Well, you know, that's what you get those L.A. artists, just using things.
It's that old Seinfeld thing. Where he was offended that one of his rival comedians converted to Judaism, and Jerry thought it was solely so that he could tell Jew jokes. And I think it was Elaine that asked him if he was offended as a Jew. He's like, no, I'm offended as a comedian.
Anywho, back to Stigmata. So now it's more of a race, because we've determined that there are five wounds in the stigmata, or that Christ received, and the last one is going to kill her. So it's a race against the clock to find out. Now, this is where, does he know what is possessing her at this point, or do we even know what is possessing her? Is she possessed?
Yes. I think we certainly know that, because she touched the rosary of, was it Father Alameda?
Yes.
Yeah, I think it's pretty clear at this point, at least to the viewer, that she is possessed by Alameda. And
but are we told that Alameda is a good guy?
Yeah, but we're also told that only the truly devout get the stigmata.
So
and we know that it's the church that's the bad guy.
Well,
in the box,
clearly.
Yeah.
Yeah, clearly, specifically in the character of a one Cardinal Daniel Hausman, Jonathan Pryce.
Yeah, that's right, Hausman. It sounds evil.
Yeah. So he discovers that they're plotting behind his back, and they're getting closer and closer, because now they realize that some things she has said and some things she has written are quotes from this text. That is the Gospel of Timothy, which was written, is the only gospel, according to the story, that was written in the time of and in the language of Christ. The closest thing we can get to Christ's real words.
Apparently.
So
I don't know much about it.
Yeah, well, I don't either, actually. I mean, I think that the Gospel of Timothy, the part about the church being inside everyone, is actually a pretty sweet notion. But again, I don't, you know, who knows? And I don't know what the church's official position on it is anyway.
Yeah, that was probably the biggest problem I had with the, what the movie was trying to convince me of. Jumping ahead a little bit, the main conflict that the Houseman has, seemingly that the Catholic Church has with this text, this gospel, that they want to keep hidden, is that the gospel says essentially you don't need a church in order to be given the grace of God. That's how I paraphrase it in my head.
Yeah, no, that's about that's about right.
And that if you don't need a church, then the entire Catholic, if not Christian, religion will crumble as a world power because nobody will need to go to church anymore. Which is dumb.
Well, that's true. Yeah, you're right.
It's just fun. I mean, I think that was also one of Martin Luther's problems in the 1500s.
Yeah, well,
which led to the whole Reformation and the beginning of the Protestant Reformation led to different sects like Lutheran Christianity,
which is actually very similar to Catholic Christianity, except for those 96 reasons.
Yeah, I mean, I go to a Lutheran church. I'm well aware that there's no importance put on where or how you worship, just that you do. So I don't think it's a new notion that some people claim you don't need a big, lavish church.
But it threatens the cardinal here, and, you know, it threatens his whole enterprise.
Somehow.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, if they got by Martin Luther, they get by the Gospel of St. Thomas.
Well, and yeah, and you're right. I mean, it would be one thing if this revelation was then going to say that, well, you're right. But you're right. You're absolutely right. Even if they said, oh, this is a verified document I guess if Christ signed it, it would be a little different. But yeah, if it's just another story, couldn't they just play it off as a different story? They have public relations people in the Vatican.
I think that's what they've done, right? They don't acknowledge it as being a true gospel.
Yeah, it's just Apocrypha, and that's with a whole bunch of other gospels that they don't consider canon, and because it's all very complicated in the Catholic Church or the Vatican, rules change only after a long time, or seemingly on a whim, depending on how it goes. Anyhow, I don't know enough about religion to pick this film apart theologically.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like they can now drink caffeine because they purchased Pepsi or anything.
Exactly, yeah, yeah. Or that they, well, never mind, I'm not even going to go there. That's very good. That's further than I'm willing to go.
Probably further than I should have gone.
Yeah, well. So, yeah, you're right. The foundation that this story is built upon is pretty shaky.
I do love, though, that any time they're actually in a church in this movie, it's like the most garish, lavish, gold-plated, gilded church I've ever seen. Like, every church in this movie looks like Donald Trump's apartment.
Yeah, well, yeah. The director of this did a bunch of music videos beforehand. I know you couldn't tell from watching the movie. But it seemed like all of the sets, like even the hairstylist or the hair salon, it wasn't just a hair salon. There was piercings and tattoos and all sorts of crazy stuff. It was Each of the sets were richly decorated.
Yeah, very subculture.
Yeah.
That hair is all.
Now we come to the point where we figure, okay, you're right, it's Alameda's spirit that is possessing her. And as the messenger of this new message, or this old message coming back. So, there's a whole scene where Kiernan offers to be the messenger instead, and the apartment catches on fire, and he walks through the fire and pulls her out unharmed, except for all the four stigmata before her. And then where does he deliver her to some sort of... Where does he dump her off? He takes her someplace.
When Houseman discovers them together?
Yeah. No, I'm sorry. Yeah, I skipped the scene where Houseman finds Frankie and tries to choke her to death. Strangle her, sorry. And Kiernan stops him from strangling her.
Yeah, that was... I love that scene. That was... So Houseman and his little buddy with the really bad Italian accent, they were trying to perform an exorcism on her, and it wasn't working. So then it just degenerated into that scene in Airplane where they were trying to silence the hysterical woman. And he was trying everything. And then, yeah, just his hands around her neck.
So, of course, Kiernan saves the day. And we deliver Frankie, who, if we haven't figured out in the first scene, is supposed to be like Francis of Assisi, because he was apparently the first person to ever bear the marks of the stigmata. According to this movie alone, I have no idea whether this is true or not. And, some other inaccuracies in this movie. Kiernan tells her at one point that monks invented alcohol or beer. Ancient Egyptians built the pyramids using beer. So that was...
Wait, but David Morrell told me monks invented champagne.
Perhaps. Could be, or chartreuse. Definitely the finer liqueurs are monk-related. And also, Father Kiernan says that the Earth is about 6 billion years old, but really it's only 4.6 billion years old.
Yeah, he got confused with how many people are on the planet, right?
I think so, yeah. He's a scientist, but he's not, he's not a census worker.
No, he's a scientist who's also a priest. Exactly. In this movie, you can't say the first without saying the second.
Of course. So anyway, it comes up with the Gospel of Thomas. They find it in the floorboards of the church in Brazil. Apparently the real-life document, the Gospel of Thomas, was not written in Aramaic, but in Coptic.
Another strike against it.
Exactly.
Oh, one fun callback to our last podcast together, when I mentioned Jennifer and I had watched Vikings.
Yes.
So the Northmen in Vikings, when they go raid English settlements for the first time, they are amazed at the amount of wealth that is just left unprotected in churches. The crosses are all gold and bejeweled, and what they find out from a priest that one of their first raids that they kidnap into slavery, what they find out is that Catholic churches in that time tended to hide their most valuable artifacts underneath or in the altar itself, which is where he found the text of the gospel.
Ah, well, there you go.
So apparently that's a thing.
Well, it is.
The Vikings was on the History Channel, so everything was true.
Well, I realized when I was recommending highly, and I still do, Until the Light Takes Us, the movie about the documentary about Norwegian death metal.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, Norwegian black metal. I neglected to say why. The reason that it came up in my memory at all, or the thing that triggered it, was that the reason why this black metal guy was also burning down churches is because he said that it was, you know, a lot of the churches there, even though they may be 1,000 years old, were built upon the, like, ancient sacred places of the people who believed in the Norse religions, and therefore they desecrated the religion before them. And the thing about Norwegians is that, you know, if you think Americans are sort of ugly about, oh, I don't know, people coming across the border or not liking outsiders. Yeah. Norwegian people, their dream world would be where the whole world is homogenous. They would like everybody to be Norwegian.
We're all sons of Odin?
No, we're not all. No, the refugees, not so much. That's why that guy went crazy and killed those kids at the summer camp. Right, kids, they were teenagers, I think. But he could not live in a world that was that wasn't as homogenous as he wanted it to be. Kind of an ugly sentiment.
Yes.
Yeah.
But getting back to Stigmata.
Yes.
Didn't you feel like the ending was a ripoff from The Rock? couldn't he have just as easily gotten the gospel and then walked out and said, hey, do you want to know who really killed JFK?
Yeah, that's, I don't know. I mean, that's where the movie, again, I remember the movie being awesome with style points, but I didn't realize just how hokey the whole thing was.
I really liked it. I know it seems like I'm ragging on it, but I found it to be a quite enjoyable rewatch. I mean, yeah. It was silly, and it was dumb, but it was Patricia Arquette at the height of her powers.
Oh, man. I'm sorry if that was the height of her powers. Hasn't she done things more recently, like Medium? Wasn't that supposed to be good? I haven't seen it.
Yeah, it was okay for a while, but kind of a throwaway TV show.
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw you yesterday and mentioned that she's on the latest season of Boardwalk Empire, which my wife and I are about a third of the way through. And man, yeah, it's rough. It was very pleasant to see her in Stigmata.
Oh, no. That's, well, then I highly recommend that you revisit Nightmare on Elm Street 3, The Dream Warriors. It is, I think, by far the best of the Nightmare on Elm Street movies, and it's got some fun stuff in there.
I don't know. I remember seeing one of them in the theater with you in 3D.
Oh, was that like Freddy's Dead or something, or...?
I don't remember which one it was, but it was Alice Cooper was in it. I remember that.
Ah, well, yeah, it must have been. Or maybe it was... See, sometimes I get some of those series mixed up because we only caught the end of those in the theaters. Like the later Friday the 13th with Alice Cooper.
Nightmare on Elm Street.
No. He did The Man Behind the Mask. That was all Friday the 13th.
Yeah, he wasn't in the movie, was he?
No, I don't think so. But you said he was in one of the Nightmare on Elm Street movies?
Yeah, I want to say he was like Freddy's dad or something.
Oh, maybe. At some point, we need to watch They Live.
I don't think I've ever seen it.
I'll get it, and then we'll have to discuss, because it's a little bit awesome. But any thoughts? Any other thoughts about Stigmata?
No, I mean, I thought it was a good. It was a fun snapshot of the late '90s, which I think is how you introduced it when we started. And I think it delivered on that.
Yeah,
I had not very fond memories of the movie. I didn't have negative memories, but I was happy to revisit it. it definitely, it captured that moment in time really well. And whether or not you can get over how silly the premise of the movie was, the mood and the aesthetic of it really brings you back to that period of time in the late 90s.
I agree with you there. From an aesthetic level, I like this movie a lot. I think I was just expecting a little more guts to it than I got. And maybe because a lot of this, the things they introduced in the way of the theology were things that I had not heard at the time. I was more impressed with it at that point than I am rewatching it.
I think maybe at a more less sophisticated point in our lives, it would have had more of an impact.
Yeah, well, it did, I think. I can definitely say it did, because it didn't quite have that impact now. So, again, I'm glad I rewatched it again. Oh, it's fine. Again, it didn't hurt me to watch it again. It just, I was just a little disappointed in it.
Yeah, when I told Jennifer that that's the movie we were doing this week, she kind of reacted negatively, because that's how she remembered the movie. She remembered it really creeping her out, because she doesn't like, you know, religious tomfoolery. That gets her creeped out more than anything else. But when I was watching it, I was thinking, but this is so silly. I mean, I had the same feeling in my memory that, like, oh, it's creepy religious kind of horror. But I think if she were to watch it again, she would realize just how silly the movie was. Not in a bad way.
No, that's fine. Again, it's fine. It's just not, it's not bad like Nightbreed was. At least it was, it did have one message going through it. It wasn't like 16 different things trying to happen at once. So that was nice. So maybe I guess it's guilty of being a little hokey.
Yeah. I mean, I really... It's dated. It really is. You know, I think at the time it delivered. You know, with some distance, and you know, it's a different world now. Hokey's a good word for it.
Well, what's on deck?
I have a couple things. Hopefully, one of them, at least one of them, you haven't seen before. Have you seen a movie called The Kingdom?
No.
Oh, okay. Let's do that then.
Okay. What's it, well, I guess I'll just, are there more than one movie called The Kingdom? If there's not, then, or if I find it, a couple of them, I'll let you know. What genre is The Kingdom?
Kind of, action, thriller, mystery?
Present day?
Yeah, it was just a few years ago. Directed by Peter Berg.
Hmm.
It's got Jason Bateman in it, Jamie Foxx.
No, I got nothing. It's awesome. Yeah, let's do it. Send your feedback to show@notinthecreepyway.com or call us on a new voicemail account to leave voice messages. Or you can text us at this account to leave text messages. The number is 425-243-9169. That's 425-243-9169. What are you waiting for? Put it in your phone right now, and then when you listen to an episode, you can just hit your contacts. Dial it already.